The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast. Presentations and interviews with leading attorneys and industry professionals. On this edition, Joshua Goldberg of Patterson Belknap Webb & Tyler LLP on conducting internal investigations in the face of a criminal inquiry. The opinions expressed by guests interviewed on LexisNexis legal podcasts do not necessarily reflect those of Reed Elsevier Incorporated, LexisNexis, subsidiary companies, shareholders, employees, or customers, and should not be considered legal advice. Joshua A. Goldberg is a partner in Patterson Belknap Webb & Tyler LLP's litigation department and a member of its white-collar defense and investigations group. Mr. Goldberg has extensive trial and appellate experience, having served as lead counsel in 15 federal jury trials and having briefed and argued more than a dozen appeals before the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit. Mr. Goldberg's practice focuses on white-collar criminal defense and related regulatory proceedings, internal investigations, and complex financial litigation. He's represented corporations and corporate executives in high-profile criminal and regulatory investigations involving alleged securities fraud, antitrust violations, and violations of the Federal Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act. Mr. Goldberg, thank you very much for your time and being part of this LexisNexis Legal Podcast.
Thank you. It's good to be with you.
Talking about conducting an internal investigation in the face of a criminal inquiry. And I guess my first question would be, when would a company typically undertake to conduct an internal investigation into possible criminal conduct?
Typically, this arises in many different ways. The most common and most immediate is in the context of an inquiry from a prosecutor or a regulator, which can come in a couple different forms. One is it could be a grand jury subpoena. Another is it could just be a request for voluntary disclosure. But, you know, it can also come from internally through a whistleblower, a disgruntled employee. It can come from a media inquiry. In the past, these cases have often started with investigative journalism from a newspaper like the Wall Street Journal. I know the backdated stock options cases from several years ago really were started with a Wall Street Journal article. Also, there can be self-discovery, and at times that can be through a compliance audit. So any of those kind of triggers can start one of these and can compel or encourage a company to decide to do an internal investigation.
Why should a company conduct such an investigation?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest reason is really just to find out what happened. Often, particularly if you're talking about a public company, the company is going to have an obligation to its shareholders, and it's going to want to find out whether, in fact, there was criminal conduct, and if so, whether it should take appropriate actions, including against perhaps its own officers or even directors. And so, you know, trying to get to the bottom of things, find out what happened, assessing potential liabilities, and, as I said, trying to determine appropriate remedial actions. Also, I mean, particularly when you're dealing with an inquiry from a prosecutor, your main goal is to avoid an indictment. And what you want to do is conduct the investigation in a thorough an independent way and set up a process that the prosecutor is going to respect and take seriously and permit you to show the prosecutor that the company is taking the issues and the alleged conduct seriously. And finally, again, from a corporate governance standpoint, you want to make sure that whatever happened, if something bad did happen, if there was criminal conduct, you want to take steps to make sure that it doesn't happen again.
So there is a clear purpose and there are specific goals of such an investigation.
Absolutely. And as I said, one of the primary goals from a risk management perspective is just that you want to avoid indictment and avoid further difficulties with either the prosecutors or the regulators. And you also want to make sure from a corporate governance standpoint that you are doing things to make sure that the company is operating properly and appropriately within the regulatory environment.
Are there specific things or factors that prosecutors consider when deciding whether to bring criminal charges against a corporate entity?
There are, and they vary somewhat by jurisdiction. With regard to the Department of Justice, there are federal guidelines, DOJ guidelines that list a total of 9 factors. The various state and local prosecutors have similar guidelines. For example, the Manhattan District Attorney's Office just published within the last year or so very similar guidelines which list a number of factors. And generally what prosecutors look at are things both related to past history and then also proactively going forward what the company is doing. So things like how serious was the offense, how pervasive was the misconduct, is there a history of misconduct? Is this the first time that something like this has come up at the company, or has this been happening over and over again? is there a pre-existing compliance program that the company can point to? If you have a compliance program in place that's supposed to root things like this out, and it happened anyways, that can be a factor. Any collateral consequences that would occur from charging? Prosecutors generally don't want to put big public companies out of business because that's going to have a tremendous collateral consequence on its shareholders and on people who are themselves innocent victims. And so that's something that prosecutors can and are supposed to consider. Prosecutors will also look at the adequacy of prosecuting individuals. So if there are particular individuals at the company who really were responsible for the wrongdoing, the prosecutors can bring criminal charges against those individuals, and often that will they'll feel like that's sufficient punishment for the corporation as a whole. And also, sort of relatedly, whether there are adequate civil or regulatory remedies that they can take, either by way of fines or by consent judgments, consent decrees, things of that type. And then finally, as I said, proactively, one of the things that prosecutors look at is how did the corporation respond to the allegations? And this goes back to what I said earlier about the need to conduct a proper and appropriate internal investigation, because one of the things you want to show the prosecutors is that you take this seriously and that you have thoroughly investigated this and that you're making timely and voluntary disclosure and showing cooperation with the prosecutors, and also that you're taking appropriate remedial action.
Well, it sounds like companies, corporations can really help themselves by knowing what steps to take to avoid an indictment.
I think that's right. I think prosecutors don't generally set out to put companies out of business and don't set out to indict organizations. Now, having said that, many prosecutors, including the current U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York, have said that they would like to put a renewed focus on, where appropriate, charging corporations or organizations for misconduct. And so what you want to do as an attorney is make sure that you're doing this internal investigation properly and that you are helping the company to address the situation so that you're not one of those companies that's going to be on the hook and actually facing criminal charges.
Has there been much of a change in the way the Justice Department or prosecutors are looking at companies? I mean, you know, given what's happened over the past few years, has there been much of a change as to the overall process?
I think there's been an ebb and flow. I don't know that there's necessarily been a formal change. There hasn't been really a change in guidelines necessarily, but there certainly, I think, is a different way, not only prosecutors, but also judges, the way they're looking at these cases. I mentioned judges. Part of that is because we've seen, in connection with the financial meltdown, some of these companies that have been investigated either criminally by a prosecutor or civilly by an agency such as the SEC, and judges have made certain comments that they weren't so happy with the fact that only select individuals had been subjected to any sort of punishment, and made comments that perhaps the corporation should be held more responsible. And those kind of comments by judges, I think, have an impact, and I think it may very well lead to prosecutors taking more seriously the possibility of bringing criminal charges against corporations.
Well, talk about how a company should go about conducting its investigation.
Well, the first thing is you want to, at the outset, make sure that you're putting in place a system so that the investigation is going to be done properly. So what does that mean? That means, first of all, you want to make sure that all the relevant evidence is going to be preserved. So you want to make sure that there's a appropriate and complete hold notice that's put in place so that the company is preserving its documents so that employees aren't deleting emails or otherwise destroying documents that might be useful. Mm-hmm. You also want to make sure that you're speaking to the right people, and often that starts with, if it's a case that started with a whistleblower, you want to begin with that person who made the allegation and just make an early assessment as to whether the allegation really has validity, and if so, what's the best way to test it, and what's the best way to really find out what happened. And from there, it's really, there's not a hard and fast rule, but it's using your judgment as, you know, an experienced investigator to try to consider an appropriate order of interviews, to kind of work your way sometimes from the bottom up, and sometimes it's better to start off at the beginning with the people who may be the wrongdoers. It sort of depends on the case. But in all cases, what you want to do is make sure that you're being thorough, that you're being specific, and that you're getting the appropriate details. And while you're doing that, in cases where there is a prosecutor who's made a request or has issued a subpoena, you want to make sure to keep the prosecutor informed, and you want to promptly respond to any requests from the prosecutors. At the same time, you're acting cooperatively, but you also need to aggressively defend your client's rights and remember that you're not the prosecutor. You have a client who has hired you to protect its interests, and that should be your paramount goal. And ultimately, and most importantly with the prosecutor, you really want to stay ahead of the prosecution. You want to own the facts and make sure that you have this information so that when you go into the prosecutor's office and you tell the prosecutor your findings, if that's the decision that's made, that you are prepared and you're giving the prosecutor accurate and complete information. Because really, the quickest way to get your client in trouble is to go in and make the prosecutors feel that your client is being dishonest or incomplete in their responses and how they're dealing with this.
Can you talk a little bit about some best practices for conducting interviews of witnesses?
Sure. Well, there's some basic requirements. One is if you are representing the company in this investigation and you're interviewing the company's employees, the first thing you need to do in those interviews is give what's usually referred to as the Upjohn warnings, which is basically just explaining to the person you're interviewing that you represent the company. You don't represent that individual. And that as the company counsel, you're conducting an investigation, and the investigation is going to include interviews of the employees, and the subject of those conversations should be privileged, and that privilege is held by the company. It's not held by the individual. In other words, the individual doesn't have any right to disclose what's being said. You also want to be very careful to tell that individual that you're not his or her attorney, and that you can't give him or her advice. During the course of those interviews, you want to make sure, as I said earlier, to be specific, to get details, and to carefully document what you're finding. During the interviews, you just also want to be very careful that you're not doing anything to taint the witness. What I mean by that is you want to make sure that you're not misleading the witness, first of all, because it's unethical as an attorney to mislead the witness or to lie to the witness during these interviews. But you also, you know, don't want to show the witness statements that other witnesses have made. You don't want to show that witness documents that maybe that witness never saw before. You don't want to provide information because, your goal is to get the information as quickly and accurately as possible. And what you don't want to be is in a situation where the prosecutor is asking you about the course of your investigation and you're explaining to the prosecutor why the witnesses that they may have an interest in talking to down the road have been tainted by all kinds of information that you learned during the course of the investigation.
I would imagine that confidentiality is a big issue in any of these investigations. Talk about some of the steps a company can take to protect the confidentiality of an investigation.
Sure. Well, part of it is something we've already touched on, which is that when you're conducting these interviews and you're giving those Upjohn warnings at the beginning of each interview, it's important to advise and remind those witnesses that the contents of your discussion are confidential and they're privileged and they should not be shared with anyone, including other people at the company. That's the first thing. The second thing is, to the extent you're going to do a report, whether it be oral or written, to a board of directors or to whoever's hired you to conduct the investigation, you really want to keep the dissemination of that report to a minimum, basically just on a need-to-know basis. This is not something that should be broadcast throughout the company. It's not something that you're going to want to publish, unless at the end of the investigation your client makes a decision that there really is an interest in publicizing the findings of the investigation. But during the course of the investigation, you really want to be careful about limiting the dissemination of information, and as I said, not sharing the information that you've learned in the course of the investigation with the witnesses and with the other people at the company who may have relevant information to the investigation.
Are there risks a company should be aware of regarding waiver of privilege?
There are, and this is a very difficult issue. It's one of the most difficult issues that an attorney is going to deal with in the course of doing an internal investigation. And what makes it so difficult is that the state of the law or the rules has really been in flux over the last several years, and I'm really focusing primarily here on the DOJ's own guidelines. There's really been a constantly evolving rule as to whether prosecutors can or cannot ask for privileged materials, and if so, what type of materials they can ask for, and if they have asked for those materials, what the implications are for disclosure of those materials in a future court proceeding or in future civil litigation. The current rule in the Department of Justice, which has been in place now for a couple years, is that prosecutors, federal prosecutors, are prohibited from requesting waivers of what's called core privileged materials, with two exceptions that I can talk about in a moment. Core privileged materials refer to legal advice given before, during, and after the misconduct occurred. So advice that was contemporaneous to whatever conduct is being investigated, advice that's been given subsequently in the course, including in the course of the investigation, that's core privileged material, and prosecutors are not currently permitted to request that information. Now, that's not to say that a company can't voluntarily decide to disclose that information if it wants to, but from a prosecutor's perspective, you're not permitted to ask for that. Now, the two exceptions, which at times can be significant, are, first of all, if the company is going to rely on an advice of counsel defense, if they're going to claim that, for example, it's a situation in which they took some action because their general counsel told them that it was the appropriate thing to do, and they're going to claim that they had a good faith basis to rely on that advice. In that situation, the prosecutor is allowed to ask for a waiver of privilege because the prosecutor is entitled to weigh whether that advice of counsel defense actually has any validity. The other exception, and this can also be a big one, where the legal department itself may have played a role in the alleged misconduct, is that prosecutors are allowed to ask for the corporation to provide privileged materials related to the communication, any communications in furtherance of a crime. I can give you an example. For example, the monster backdated stock options case from a few years ago. Mm-hmm. The general counsel himself had been involved in some of the criminal conduct, and in that situation, the prosecutor was permitted to obtain that information. Basically, if the lawyer, like anyone else at the company, is involved in the criminal conduct, the theory is that the prosecutor has a right to that material. So those are the two exceptions. Now, in practice, what gets very difficult is, from a counseling your client perspective, is when to advise your client as to whether to voluntarily disclose information, even if the prosecutor can't request it. And what makes it particularly difficult is, under the current state of the law, and this has also been changing, but the current state of the rules for the DOJ are that the prosecutor can't punish a corporation for failing to waive privilege. So if the corporation either declines to waive privilege or it doesn't voluntarily disclose it, that's not something that the prosecutor can hold against the company. Okay. Now, what gets difficult, however, is that the failure to provide relevant information can be construed by the prosecutor as being a factor against mitigation. In other words, the prosecutor can say that the corporation has not been fully cooperative and therefore is not entitled to mitigating credit for its cooperation. For example, if you conducting an internal investigation have obtained the underlying facts through the course of your investigation, you may have a valid claim that that's attorney work product.
Right.
And you may have a valid claim that some of the communications that led to your discovery of those facts were privileged communications. The prosecutor is entitled to ask for those underlying facts because the DOJ takes the perspective that those underlying facts are not privileged. And so then the company is in a very difficult bind. Are they going to waive the privilege and produce those materials, or are they not, and then going to take a risk that the prosecutor will withhold credit for them for their cooperation?
Mr. Goldberg, to sum up, what is the best advice you can give today as to conducting internal investigations?
Well, I think the best advice is that you really, in the course of investigation, you really are in a triage mode, and you really are trying to collect information as quickly but yet as thoroughly as possible. And it is really important to leave no stone unturned and to do it as expeditiously but as thoroughly as possible, to make sure that you're speaking to all of the relevant witnesses, all of the people who may have information that's needed to determine exactly what happened, and also to run down those documents, collect those documents, and properly review them at all times, doing things above board, ethically, of course, and doing things in such a way that you would be proud to present that both to the company's board of directors and, if necessary, to a prosecutor. At all times, you should think about, is there anything that I'm doing that, if it saw the light of day, would it be embarrassing to me, but more importantly, would be embarrassing to my client? Is this something that, if it became public, the way this investigation was conducted, is there something about that investigation itself that's going to be embarrassing to the company and therefore detrimental to the company's interests?
Sounds like excellent advice, Mr. Goldberg. Thank you very much for your insights on conducting an internal investigation in the face of a criminal inquiry. I look forward to having you back for additional updates in the future. Thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. Good to talk to you.
Joshua Goldberg of Patterson, Belknap, Webb & Tyler, LLP. Thank you for listening to this LexisNexis Legal Podcast. Visit the LexisNexis communities at www.lexisnexis.com/community. The LexisNexis Corporate and Securities Law Community Podcast, copyright 2011 by LexisNexis, a division of Reed Elsevier, Incorporated. I'm Steve Bursler. Thank you for listening.